I want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track open line. We're celebrating 22 years in business and just entering our ninth year of doing this program. We have a few new exciting changes. First, we have our new 2016 open line format that comes with the launching of our new website. You can also find an archive of past topics on the publication event tab. Plus, our new book, Cracking the Business Code, is available on Amazon, or you can click on the book icons on our homepage. Our topic today is where to go fishing for candidates and what else to do when all else fails. My name is Dana Barocca. I'm the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services. I'll be hosting our program today. We have just a few housekeeping items, so we're going to jump right into our topic. For those of you joining us for the first time at Lighthouse, everything we do goes back to our mission statement to bring effective insight to your organization. We do this through our in-depth work style and personality assessments to raise the hiring bar and assist companies with a variety of other services, including team building, stress management programs, and workshops. In fact, we just opened an office in Taiwan, so if you have an operation in Asia and would like to get leadership coaching for your folks over there or providing ideas of how to interact with a U.S. company, just let us know. Our Keeping on Track open line series is a response to the feedback we get from both our clients domestically and globally to address the various issues that organizations are facing today. And our goal is to make this an interactive program, so on your screen you'll see an area that you can send questions or ideas. During our discussion, we'll attempt to respond to as many of you as possible, so please join us with your thoughts and insights you have along the way. At the conclusion of the program, we're going to open up the line so you can talk directly with our guests. So you may want to write down two or three questions you can either send in during the program or once we open up the line. It's my privilege to introduce our very special guest today, Barry Deutsch. Barry is a very close friend, business colleague. Barry is a well-known thought leader in hiring and peak performance management. He's a frequent and sought-after speaker for management meetings, trade associations, and CEO forums such as Vistage International, which is a worldwide CEO membership organization that has well over 20,000 CEOs and senior executives. Many of his clients view him as their virtual chief talent officer. Barry is also is frequently asked to present the Impact Hiring Solutions award-winning programs on hiring, retention, and motivating top talent, and leverages a vast knowledge which is based in over 30 years in the executive search field with a track record of successful placements in multi-billion-dollar Fortune 100 companies, entrepreneurial firms, mid-market, high-growth businesses, and everybody in between. He has worked closely with thousands of CEOs and key executives to help improve the hiring success, leverage human capital, and raise the bar on talent acquisition. If you have not purchased Barry's book called You're Not the Person That I Hired, I call it the Bible of Hiring. You should go on to Amazon or Barry's website, Impact Hiring Solutions, and get a copy. It has everything from soup to nuts. Barry earned his BA and MA from the American University in Washington, D.C., and prior to his executive search career, Barry held positions of responsibility in finance and general management with Mattel, Beecher's Foods, and Westinghouse Cable. I feel privileged to have Barry with us today and to share the ideas that will help each of us in preparing for the future and for dealing with today's business issues. Also, registration for our next program will begin at the end of this program, and for those of you signed up today, you're also signed up for our next part two of this series on July 26. Barry, welcome back to Open Line. Oh, one more thing. We do not have slides today, so just take lots of notes and read Barry's book. Barry, it's all yours.
Dana, thank you for that warm welcome. Can you hear me? Am I coming across okay?
Dana, absolutely perfect.
Okay, good. All right. So let's talk a little about hiring. Couple of perspectives. First, for those of you that might be with Vistage companies, you have a privilege of being able to access the Vistage site, and you may be very familiar with the economic forecasting brothers that are that have become a legend within the Vistage CEO and senior executive community, known as the Bulio brothers. The Bolio brothers have now moved their economic forecast of when we're going to hit the next dip or downturn in the economy out to late 2018, sometime in early 19. And I'm going to guess they're going to project that even further out, and maybe even 2020. So we're at a point where we're in a hyperextended job market. There's way more jobs than folks that can fill them. I do 1 to 2 presentations every week around the country, and the number one issue is I just can't find enough people to hire. And the problem is that becomes your business constraint. If you don't have enough folks in customer service, operations, sales, whatever it might be, you just put the glass ceiling on whatever your business can accomplish. Layered on top of that is companies are fighting their heart out to keep their very best talent. So you're going to try to poach someone from another company. Companies are coming all up with all sorts of creative ways, including lots of money, to keep their star performers. So it's very hard to extract them. And the dominant method that most companies still use to find candidates is the same method they were using in the middle of the recession, when there were lots of people unemployed, long-term unemployment, very few jobs. What's that strategy? Taking a generic job description and posting on a generic job board, like Indeed, Monster, CareerBuilder, LinkedIn. This was an outstanding strategy in the middle of the recession. Unfortunately, in a hyperextended job market, it's completely dysfunctional. All you tend to see is the bottom third of the candidate pool. Everybody else's rejects, retreads, dysfunctional, toxic folks. And if all you're seeing is the bottom third of the candidate pool, you're doomed to fail no matter how good a company you are, no matter how great a job you've got, you're doomed to fail before you've met the first candidate. So we have to come up with better strategies, better tactics, better methods to bring people quickly, easily, and inexpensively into the top of the funnel, or we're back to the constraint of not having enough people to do what we need. Many of my clients use a cute term to describe this process of posting job descriptions and hoping for the very best. They call it attracting the best of the worst. In a presentation just the other day, one of my seminar participants actually rephrased that and called it the cream of the crap. That's become my new operative phrase. I actually have a term that I've been using for years. I call it post and pray. We stick a generic job description up on a generic job board, cross our fingers, and pray that by some miracle, a candidate is going to drop from the rafters into our lap and solve all our problems. And as I said, during the recession, this worked great. Right now, it's totally dysfunctional. So we have to come up with a better way, a better methodology to bring good people to the table. What's the problem with that? It requires a little time and effort. You know, posting ads is the least expensive, least time-consuming effort. It's completely passive. Just stick a job description up, hope for the very best. Then what happens is at the end of 30 days, let's say the job posting expires in 30 days, you've pulled the cream of the crop, no one's really viable. What do you do next? Most companies tell me they repost the ad. Who do you pull the second time? The same group as the first time. Now here's what happens. So you get to the end of this process, you've wasted your time on all these deadbeats that can't do the job. You're wasting time with them because there's no one else to look at. You knew from the very moment you looked at their resume they weren't a fit, but there's no one else. So you try to move them through the process and, you know, hope you find a diamond in the rough. Anyway, you get to the end of the process, you haven't found the right candidate. It's now what? 4 weeks, 5 weeks, 6 weeks. That hiring manager is frustrated. They're doing that job because you can't ignore doing that work. They can't do their own job. They're back. Their boss is on their back. Their customers are complaining. Things are falling through the cracks. Stuff isn't getting done. Execution is failing. What sets in at this stage? Desperation. The minute, as a hiring manager, you realize you're probably not going to see any better candidates than the ones you've already seen, the deadbeats, rejects, retreads, dysfunctional and toxic folks, what do you do when you get desperate? You lower your standards, you sub-optimize, and your thought process doesn't become, let me get a star in that chair. Your thought process becomes better a warm body than nobody at all. What if my boss walked in tomorrow and said, you know, Dana, you've gotten by for 4-5 weeks without having this job filled. Let's just eliminate it. You probably don't really need it. Or, hey, we're having a little up and down blip in what's going on in the business. Let's put a hiring freeze on for 3 months. Now you're really screwed because you can't get someone in that chair. So desperation plays an enormous role when you don't have enough great people at the top of the pipeline. And that's really what we want to talk about, is how do we get better people into the top of that pipeline. Let's spend a moment or two, and before we jump into the tactics of how to do this, let's talk a little about what I call candidate motivation 101. Why do people leave jobs? What do they look for in new jobs? And this is so important to understand before you could advertise, do attraction marketing, and even begin to recruit potential candidates. Now, let me take a little sidestep here for a minute. So I'm going to go to about 11:30-ish. Is that right, Dana? And then we'll throw it open for 10 or 15 minutes to Q&A. Does that sound good?
That's perfect.
Okay. And Dana, how are you getting the Q&A? The question's coming to you through a chat window?
Two ways. One is, as we're moving along here, if anybody has questions, put it through the chat. Otherwise, Barry, when you're finished with this, with the first part of this discussion, we can open up the line and then everyone can just talk.
And Dana, what's our goal over the next couple of sessions? Is it to do a different topic or is it to stay on the same topic?
Stay on the same topic and... And
go deeper. Got it.
Go deeper in each one.
Okay.
And then
all right.
What to do at the very end if all else fails.
It's funny. Okay. Let's start with this idea of what motivates candidates and why they leave. And I'm going to use just one phrase or word for right now. And that phrase or word is opportunity. Top caliber candidates, regardless of the level of the job, seek opportunity. And when they don't get it, they leave. And it's one of the most important things they look for. And they don't ask you for it in the interview, but if you can't articulate it, they self-select out. So then what happens? You're left with the folks who are desperate, aggressively want to leave their current job, or non-performers, and they're the bottom, you know, third of the candidate pool. All right, so let's talk about opportunity. We can break this down into three categories. Number one, learning. What am I going to learn in this job? How are they going to train me? What are they going to give me? Why am I going to become better at what I'm doing? How am I going to master this information? Everybody wants to learn, regardless of the level of their job. Number two, what kind of impact am I going to have? Am I just a little cog in the wheel and no one cares about me and I'm just, you know, a stamped number on some form in a back office? Or am I helping in some way for this organization, team, department, function, or group to be successful? I think it's important, let me take a little sidebar journey here, to understand this from a candidate perspective. No matter how menial, low, first line, bottom of the totem pole the role is, everybody wants to feel like they're making some kind of meaningful contribution. And one of the very best books I would recommend you read that's become one of my favorite is a book by a very well-known author by the name of Patrick Lencioni. Patrick's written a number of books in a parable format. One of the most popular books he wrote was called The Five Dysfunctions of a Team. He wrote another book called something like The Four, you know, Elements of Mistakes that CEOs Make. But he wrote another book a few years ago that's become one of my favorite. I'm probably paraphrasing it a bit, but you can look him up online. The book is called I have it in front of me now. I just found it on my bookshelf. It's called The Three Signs of a Miserable Job. I'll say that again. It's called The Three Signs of a Miserable Job. It's a very easy read. A couple hours, you can pound out the book. And it's almost comical when you start to read it and you realize what goes through the minds of your employees and their jobs. This should be, along with a couple other books I'll mention, this should be a Bible for you of what to think about when you're hiring. And then the more important issue is once you've brought the person aboard, retaining them. So three signs of a miserable job. And it has a lot to do with how we use attraction marketing to bring people to the table. All right, so where was I? Learning, impact, and then the last one is, and it relates to these other two, becoming. What am I going to become for having been in this job? A year from now, 2 years from now, 5 years from now, what will I look like? What will I be capable of? How will I have changed professionally given the fact that I took this job or am in this role with this company. And we need to understand that. We call that the LIB curve, learning, impact, and becoming. It's a slight variation on one of the most important models of human behavior in companies. One of the greatest management authors to ever write wrote a model for understanding this back in the 1940s and 50s. His model was about what employees' needs are in their job. Everything in human resources today, human capital management, employee engagement, employee satisfaction, happiness in their role, all stems from what this gentleman wrote about in the 1940s and 50s. Now you're probably thinking, well, is it Drucker, Deming, Carnegie? It's none of those. The gentleman's name was Abraham Maslow. If you've ever taken a management class, this would be a household name. You'll recall that Maslow created a model called the hierarchy of needs. He used a pyramid to convey his model. He talked about, you know, after employees check off all that really, or people check off all that basic stuff like shelter, housing, security, compensation, he said all great people move to the top of the pyramid, this capstone. What do you call the top of the pyramid? Self-actualization. I want to learn. I want to grow. I want to be respected. I want to be fulfilled in my role. I want to get better at what I'm doing. I want to master. I want to be respected for it. I want to feel like I'm making a contribution. I mean, I could go on for half an hour about these words and phrases. No matter what level of job, the very best at what they do, whether it's someone who's a custodian, a customer service rep, a mid-level inventory control manager, a senior executive, all want to feel great value for the role they're playing.
Barry, an interesting comment just came in that what you just described is what a lot of people are saying the millennials are looking for.
That's a very interesting issue. It doesn't matter what the generation is. Everybody wants this. Now, what's the problem with the millennials? And I'll call them the younger generations because you've seen this trend start to build ever since you got out of the baby boomer generation. You know, as baby boomers, I don't know if we have any of them on the phone. I'm a baby boomer. You know, I'm 58 years old. When we started work, it didn't matter how bad it is. It didn't matter how abusive our boss was. We just put our nose down, you know, worked our little heart out, you know, ignored all the drama and stuff going around us and realized we had to put in 2 or 3 years and we couldn't leave our job in 3 months because we were unhappy for some reason. So as we've gotten the younger and younger generations, this learning, impact, and becoming, this value proposition idea has become more and more important. And now it's really manifested itself in the latest generation, the millennials. And they are very quick to vote with their feet when they don't feel they're getting this kind of value of learning, impact, and becoming. They don't care if they've got 3 jobs in 2 years. It's just not important to them. What's really important to them is the value they're getting from their role. And if we can't articulate that in advertising, networking, finding people, bringing them to the table, attraction marketing, you never get to see the very best. So, Dana, to answer your question, I think it's important regardless of what the generation is.
Good point.
Okay, so here's how this works now. So let's say I'm working for Dana. And we start off really well, first 3 or 4 months, you know, the curve is fairly steep. I'm learning a lot of new things. I feel like I'm having an impact. The ball is moving forward. I'm getting better at what I do. And then all of a sudden, we hit a wall and the curve starts to decline. I'm not learning at the pace I would hope I'm learning. I don't feel like I'm having any kind of impact. In fact, it feels like we're going backwards. It feels like busy work, make work. I don't really see how what I do in the organization impacts the overall company, team, or department. And I've been here another 3 months. I'm no better than I was today than 3 months ago. I'm a great performer. I'm an outstanding performer. What will I start to do when I feel that curve, that LIB curve, begin to decline and become a slower level of growth? I'll start looking. I'll go onto the job boards. I'll try to see if there's a more compelling opportunity out there, or I'll call the people I know in my network and see what they got going at their companies. Here's the question I pose in every workshop I do. I ask groups of CEOs and senior executives, what percentage of your workforce in any given month, okay, so what are we in? We're in the month of June. In the month of June, what percentage of your entire workforce is doing this? either going on to the job boards and seeing if there's the grass is greener somewhere else, or they're calling folks in their network. 50%. 50% of your workforce is doing this in any given month. They may not have they may not even have a resume prepared, but they're so turned off, disengaged, disgusted that they've put a foot out the door. They're trying to see if the grass is greener somewhere else. Now, this is a double-edged sword. So if you're trying to hire a quality manager within an X radius around your facility, let's say there's 50 people who could do that job, that means 25 of them would be willing to talk to you. But you never get to see those 25. You never get to talk to them. Because what's the dominant method most companies use to try to attract people? A generic job description on a generic job board. That is not a compelling piece of work. That is not attraction marketing. That is a back office, administrative, clerical, regulatory kind of document that's codified in some notebook in human resources that never sees the light of day, except when we try to advertise for a job. And it is a disgusting, revolting, repulsive tool to try to bring people forward. Great people, great candidates, couldn't give a darn what you want as an employer. They just don't care. They want to know what's in it for me. What am I going to learn? What impact will I have with you? What will I become for having been in that job? And if you can't articulate that in clear, precise, specific language, you never get to see those folks. They take their hand, put it down, and you get, as I said, the bottom third of the candidate, the cream of the crap. So one of the things we want to be talking about, and we'll get to this in our next session with each other, is how do we frame a compelling statement of work to bring the very best to the table? And I'm going to go in very specific detail and give some examples around it of how we do that. It is by far the most popular thing that we have ever done in 20 years. It's the piece we get the most feedback on. And the chapter in our book, Dane alluded to the book before, in the middle of the book is called How to Attract the Bottom Third of the Candidate Pool. It's supposed to be funny, right? I hope all of you were chuckling on that. The book's written a little tongue-in-cheek. There's a little humor behind it, a little biting humor, should I say. But that's the most popular chapter because we go into excruciatingly fine detail exactly how to do each of these steps with charts, graphs, statistics, methods, techniques. So if you want to leg up before our next session, I urge you to go out and get yourself a copy of that. We also have a ton of information on our website related to attracting and finding candidates. So we need a better method to attract and bring folks to the table. And one of those steps is using a tool other than the job description to bring the very best forward. Now, let me take a little sidebar journey here. Okay, so I said that's 50% of the equation is half the people that could do the job you want will be willing to talk to you, but they won't answer the kind of job description ad you post. The job description is not an ad. Let's get that in agreement. It's not an ad. It's an administrative tool. You got to use something that's more compelling to attract folks. So that's the first piece. The second piece then is once you've written this more compelling item, half a page, three quarters of a page, this attraction marketing tool, we call it a compelling marketing statement. Then the key is how do I, with laser focus, target that to get it in front of the kinds of folks that I'd like to hire. Instead of casting it out there, you know, like throwing a fishing net in the lake for all of humanity to see, where you pull in dolphins and mackerel and, you know, whatever it is, but it's not what you really want. We want to talk about how do we specifically, with laser focus, go after the right group of candidates who can do what we need them to do. So that's what we're going to do in our next two sessions is get into those specific tactics.
Barry, a question just came in. How do you keep current employees by providing opportunity if you're a small organization, there's currently nowhere for them to move beyond their current position?
Okay, so this is sort of beyond the scope of our current talk, but I have yet to come across an organization in 30 years that can't do something to make someone's job more compelling. Number one, I have yet to meet an organization that can get done everything they need to get done. There's always more stuff, more things, marketing, operations, efficiency, KPI, whatever it is, how do you take people's roles and expand, evolve, change? And one of the things I think you'll see in the book that Lencioni wrote on the three elements of a miserable job, or the three signs of a miserable job, is that, you know, what's the old 1970s term? Time fills up. Dana, can you remember the phrase? Time fills to, you know, the available time available.
I think that was the devil's hands or something.
I'm slaughtering this trite phrase, but you've got someone working, they're working 40 hours a week. You're like, oh, they're at capacity, they can't do anymore. I'm going to almost guarantee you they've got capacity to probably do 50% more work. They're just bored out of their mind, and they're letting whatever you've assigned to them fill their 40 hours. They're finding a way to stretch it out. Most people I found are capable of incredible efficiency, effectiveness, impact. We just don't challenge, train, develop, and give them the opportunity and then coach them through it. And if you're not doing those things actively with everybody in your company, making the assumption that people are happy because they're showing up for work is about the furthest thing from the truth that's possible. So we have to make this an active program of, you know, and there are lots of people who have done much better work on this than I could ever imagine. There are volumes of books, blogs, articles, you name it, on things like work enrichment, job sharing, cross-functional training. I could go on with all the techniques of how do you make someone's job more fulfilling and more interesting to them. But if you're not doing that and you don't have the specific tactics, steps, and action plans in place to do it, then your best performers will over time just leave. And what's left, the dirt balls, the bottom third of the candidate pool, the folks that can't get done what you need done. In most organizations, a Pareto principle exists, where 80% of the work gets done by 20% of the people. And if your best 20 leave, then you're going to find yourself in a tremendous efficiency and effectiveness crunch, because you just can't get done what you need done. We could spend hours discussing that, and as Dana knows, I have an entirely different program that I teach to my clients in Vistage Community and CEO Forums called You're the Person I Want to Keep. Dana, maybe that's a program we tackle next year.
That's a great idea.
Okay, let me hit one more topic, and then I'm going to throw it open in our last few minutes for this idea of Q&A.
Okay.
All right, so now the next question becomes, where do candidates come from? So, like, where's Waldo? And there are really four categories. The very best are what we'll call, I'm sorry, not the very best. The vast majority of candidates come to you, we call the aggressive pool. These are the ones that when you post a job description ad, they're the ones who are shotgunning their resume to every opening. They're the bottom third of the candidate pool. They're either out of work, they're about to be out of work, they desperately want to get out of their current role. At any point in time, this is perhaps 10 to 15% of the overall candidate pool. And average, mediocre, minimally qualified, rejects, retreads, and so forth. But that's the dominant group that most companies bring to the table by running job descriptions as ads and thinking they're attracting the very best. That's group one. Group two is what we'll call the selectives. This is the group whose LIB curve has declined. They're frustrated. They want a better opportunity. They don't have to leave their current job. They're not at risk of leaving. They're doing a good job in their current company, and they're making a fair wage. The operative word is the most difficult of this group. We call them the selectives. So if I'm looking for a controller position, I might see 15 controller positions in my geographic area. I may only actually apply to one or two. It's got to be extremely compelling for me to put my hand up in the air and come forward. I already have a good job. I'm not at risk of losing my job. I don't need another job. I need a better opportunity. That group, the selectives, is the sweet spot of what we're going to focus on in our next two sessions of how do we attract and bring those folks to the table. Group three is what we'll call the sleepers. This is the group that would also is a little bit frustrated. They're not having the impact they'd like. They're not learning as fast as they want. They're not becoming their vision of what they should be. The problem is they're not doing anything about it. They're not going on to the job boards. They're not seeing open positions. They're not telling their network. They got their head down. This is where you'd have to probably use a recruiter like Moa to surgically extract that person with a crowbar from their current company. Or if you're not using a recruiter, you probably would have to have a personal relationship to get that person to put their hand up and come forward. Now, what's the problem with the sleeper group? It's prohibitively expensive. You know, paying recruiter fees can be very pricey, and it takes forever. It's a lot of nurturing, seduction, conversations. I mean, I have clients now that are telling me they've been looking to fill certain roles where they're trying to get sleepers for almost a year. They've had those jobs open. And that's not unusual in this kind of economy. And here's the scary part. We're not even at the peak of the job market yet. If the next economic downturn isn't until 18, 19, 20, and we're having trouble filling jobs today, imagine what it'll be like next year, the year after, the year after that. You know, that stuff that McKinsey wrote, you know, the war for talent and all those things back in the dot-com boom, that's a joke compared to how tough the market is right now. And so, as I said, we're going to have to use some very different methods and techniques to fill the top of our funnel with great people. And Dana has kindly offered my services to do this a couple of more times, where we'll get into those specific tactics details. Okay, last group, and then we'll throw it open to Q&A. The last group is what we call the non-candidate. This is the person who had no intention of ever taking your job from the split second, from the very beginning, they started interviewing with you. They're just kicking tires. They're trying to see what they're worth. They're playing you off against a better deal at their current company or someone else. Our goal is to eliminate the non-candidates as fast as possible. Because what happens is, and you'll see this start to increase over the next couple of years as the job market continues to heat up, more and more offers will get rejected. Your goal right now should be 100% acceptance of all offers. Just because a candidate jumps through your hoops in the interview process doesn't mean they're going to take the job offer at the end. And maybe we'll talk about this toward the end of our last session, but we could spend 3 hours on just how to close a candidate that has multiple compelling opportunities, including where they currently are. What we don't want to do is get into a mode where we're playing what I like to call the runaway bride syndrome. Y'all remember Julia Roberts in The Runaway Bride? Mm-hmm. We get right up to the altar, we try to close the deal, boom, jumps on the horse, moves in the other direction. Now we're back to ground zero. And rarely do I ever see my clients go with the second best candidate. Usually it's, let's start the whole thing over again. Now instead of it having taken 4, 5, or 6 weeks, now we're looking at 10, 11, 12, cascade that through your organization, and you can imagine how difficult this can be. We got to get it done the first time. We got to get the right group of candidates to the table, great candidates that we have enough to make a selection from, and we got to close the deal every single time on the person who we think could do the job and we want to attract. As I said, in our next two sessions, we're going to get into the specific tactical steps piece by piece and break them down of what you can do to fill the top of your funnel with other techniques than posting and praying. David, let's throw it open to a few questions for the next couple of minutes.
Sure. Just a couple things. We're going to Barry, before we go there, could you give everybody a homework assignment that they could work on before our next session, which is going to be on July 26th at 11 o'clock Pacific time?
A homework assignment. I would recommend the first step is to take your current ads you're running, your job descriptions, and compare that to Chapter 7 in our book of what we call Compelling Marketing Statement. You can also go onto our website under the Hiring Manager tab. There's a free resources section, and you can download examples of compelling marketing statements. Our blog has thousands of articles in it, many of which cover this exact topic. In the search engine for the blog, you can just type compelling marketing, and you can see examples, illustrations, some of the comments we've made. I've written, for those that are in the Vistage community, numerous articles on this subject that can be found on the Executive Street blog on the front page of the Vistage website, and there's a ton of content, including an overview of my entire 3-hour presentation. It's about a 45-minute webinar that they've recorded in that Friday webinar piece, and you can either search on my name or just go to the Friday webinars and search for You're Not the Person I Hired in that list.
Okay. And so to get that information, they can go. The website is on your screen right now, impacthiringsolutions.com. Lots of information there. And also, I would recommend, as I mentioned in the beginning, I refer to Barry's book as the Bible of Hiring. It's called You're Not the Person I Hired. You can get that either through Barry's site or going on Amazon. If you don't have it, get that. Because before we can move on to the other topics, you need to get this down. Because if you are posting just your job description, that won't do. And going on to the next subject matter that we're going to cover on July 26th, it won't make any difference. So the five areas we are going to cover through this series are where to go fishing for candidates, how to fish for candidates, methods for reeling them in, keeping a constant watchful eye out for talent of how to go about just keeping radar up, and what to do when all else fails. We have quite a number of people on the call today. So what we're going to do is we're going to open up the line to see if anybody has any specific questions for Barry. Some people like to talk, some people don't. If you don't, then just email Barry. You'll see Barry's email address on your screen right now. When I open the lineup, I'm going to ask everyone to please put your phone on mute so we don't hear music in the background or shuffling, and then unmute your phone to ask Barry a question. If it gets too noisy, we're going to have to just cut it, and then we'll meet everybody again on July 26th. Again, you're all signed up for that session for part two. If you have other people in your company you want to have join, or other people in your roundtable group or other friends or association members, please have them join in. So we're going to open up the line in just 1 second here, and please ask your questions to Barry. We have just a few minutes left. Okay, the line is now open. Any particular questions for Barry before he takes off? I know Barry has probably a flight to catch or so. Any questions? Everyone's quiet. Don't forget to unmute your phone.
This is by far, I think, the hardest thing that companies do. The interviewing is simplistic in assessing candidates compared to trying to get the very best to the table.
It's tough. It's tough. And you guys have a tough homework assignment also. So if you, when you do that, have it all prepared for the next discussion. And if you have questions or anything in between, please feel free to email Barry or give him a call. Okay. Any last-minute questions here? Sometimes people are shy because I know we have a lot of people on the call today.
If anyone is, you know, sometimes folks are uncomfortable in a public forum throwing out questions, thoughts, concerns, you're welcome to, I don't know, Dana, if you've shared my email address, but you're welcome to email me directly if you've got a specific question or issue you'd like me to respond to. I'd be glad to do that if you were on this call.
And your contact information is on the screen that everybody's looking at.
Okay.
And then besides Barry's program, we also have one other program coming up later in the month. It's called The Key to Becoming a Successful Multi-Generational Family Business, and you can sign up for that by going on the link on the last page. We do have a question just came in. Somebody said they're going to email you directly, Barry. So please feel free to do that. Thank you so much for attending session one. This was great, Barry. Thank you for your time, and we look forward to seeing having everybody attend July 26th for part two, and then part three will be on August 2nd. At 11 a.m. Pacific time. Thank you again, everybody, for attending, and we shall see you next month. Take care now. Bye-bye.